And sulfur dioxide and sulfuric acid is only one example. It's perfectly possible to have a volcano erupt, and this has happened in history, and produce pure cyanide gas. And nothing could survive that. And also, I don't know if technology that could really isolate a large group, a large population, and we're talking about several hundred people, from that kind of influence. So the only way I can interpret this incredibly bizarre sentence is that some big spaceship is going to come down and pick them up and keep them up out of this thing until the Earth settles down, cools off, and all the gases that have been released have been diluted and incorporated into plant life and so on. And the reason I believe that is the phrase that is used in Hebrew, the Holy of Holies, is what I believe to be the phrase in the Greek New Testament that describes the New Jerusalem, the Holy City, if you remember, the Book of Revelation, that comes down from the sky. And it's a big, big city that's coming down, if you remember the measurements of that city. And that city, to me, is a craft. And if you've ever seen a giant spaceship, as I have, 600-700 feet long, it does look like an incredibly large city. And if you've seen movies like Star Wars and so on, you know how big they look in the movies. They look like cities. So that's the sort of thing. And the clue to that is using the word the tree of the Garden of Eden, which is the tree of knowledge, not necessarily the one of good and evil. I personally believe, I don't think any biblical scholar would agree with me, that the Garden of Eden was not a terrestrial garden, as we imagine, but simply a spaceship that landed in a hostile environment after the last cataclysm, which is the Noah flood, and set up shop with a complete ecological environment where gases were processed, plants were grown, animals, all the things necessary for a life support system existed. And of course, Adam and Eve got tired of being bottled up in this spacecraft and wandered outside, and from there on they were in trouble, and all of us were in trouble. So that's the way I interpret this particular sentence. Now, maybe some of you have some creative ideas, and if you had, I'd like to hear them as to how you would interpret this very enigmatic sentence. Anybody have any ideas yet?
Can you repeat the sentence again?
For what?
Repeat it again.
The whole sentence? Okay. In 1999, would appear the Holy of Holies, the tree of the Garden of Eden, the 5 plus 7, we've already gone into what the 12 is, as a shelter and refuge for 10 years. This would obviously run to 1999, to the end of the century. Okay? Now the next sentence refers to the one I just read, and it goes as follows. Be prepared to meet the 5 plus 6, that's 11, and the 135 plus hour. That means those beings will be aboard what I interpret, and I may be wrong, as a giant spacecraft. Now, the 135 plus hour are the, not the children who were born, they're the progenitors of the children. Remember, I clearly distinguished between the two sets. The 5 plus 6 is an enigma because it adds up only to 11 and not 12. Remember I said there are 12. Well, the reason for the 11 is that one of these roving quarterback 12 is on Earth today. And I already met him, so I've got to meet 11 more, okay? The puzzle and the enigma there. Now, the next sentence, it's very short and very terse. It's almost in order, and that's why I'm not identifying with certain things. It says, the stronghold, build it in secret. And that's what's been done, and that's where it's going to be kept. As I told you, we have a big responsibility for all these mothers and children. Okay, now we're going to break down some of these big blocks the 80 months and the 90 months and separate them out so you can understand some of the fine detail of what's going on.
I have a question. Number 5 is referred to in the last two messages. Is there any symbolism in the Kabbalistic symbolism in the text of number 5?
The 5 refers to the he always looks at me with the deep philosophical question. There are 12 who make up the universe in terms of love, don't they? I know that I got 12 here now. Get rid of one. The 12 has a whole of me that the number 12. You obviously can have many combinations, 6 and 6 and all that sort of thing. Normally, the 12 operate in groups of 3. I've got it wrong again. Anyway, there are 4 groups of 3. The three groups of three who make up the 9 operate as the laws that hold up the universe. And the other 3 are not responsible for holding up the universe. They take forms and they go around the thing. I'll give you an example of what it means to hold up the universe. There's a fellow who's a very interesting chap in Quebec called Arthur Matthews, who had some contact with Nikola Tesla, and is an inventor, and has had some very unusual extraterrestrial experiences. Back in 1939, in the fall of 1939, when World War II started, and Britain was involved, and Canada, being a part of the Commonwealth, was involved immediately before the United States was involved. Arthur, who lives way out in the Quebec Hills, above Quebec City, stepped out of his house, and I reconstructed the whole scene with it in person, and saw over the hill, a little mountain about 2 miles away, what we would today call a spacecraft, but in his day it could only be thought of in 1939 as a dirigible. He saw this long disc-shaped thing with aluminum appearance, and he immediately concluded the Germans, since the war was on, had gotten a dirigible over and were going to do something bad to Canada. Okay, it's a natural conclusion, since they had no other bases. So he reported this to the RCMP. And we checked the records and found out that he did indeed report on the day he said a German dirigible hanging over the hills of north of Quebec City, okay? That's the fact. About a week later, he stepped out of his same door in his house and saw 2 people, a man and a woman, who were dressed in what we would today call spacesuits, but he just called them overalls, okay? Every age has its own little designations. And they walked up to him, and they looked like regular people, except for the funny quality of their overalls, okay? Some kind of aluminized material. And he said, "Who are you?" He's a very brusque man. And they said, "Well, we've just come here from Venus." And he said, "Yeah, my mother is a sow." I mean, some vulgar. Anyway, they said, "No, we really are from Venus, and we've come here to talk to you." And he said, "Well, tell me." Anyway, he wrote a whole book about it, and you can catch up on the details. But the punchline is that being an engineer by training, you don't know how they could maintain this. Now, mind you, this is 1939 when all we had was propellers, right? And funny looking little trains. And he said, "How do you maintain this thing? Where's the engine? I want to see what kind of." So they walked across the field where this big craft was parked, and they went aboard. And the reason I said what I did about the Garden of Eden being a big spaceship, I think I was influenced heavily by Arthur's experience. Arthur said they went through many rooms, and they were all botanical rooms with all kinds of trees that drew fruit and so on and so on. But they led him to an elevator tower, which went up about 4 stories, and he was being led to the engine room. Okay, that's what he'd asked for. And when he got to the engine room, all he saw was 4 people standing back to back in the 4 directions. And he said, "Well, where's the engine?" And they said, "That's the engine." He said, "Well, what did that do?" So they really concentrate, and they hold up the ship, and they make it move. Everything with mental power. So I thought to myself at the time, I suppose one of them winks out. Right? It's called, it's put out by this Mark Lemoni Hill Publishing Company in California, and it's called something like The Living Life. I'll let you know that. I don't remember the title. But anyway, that's the responsibility of the nine. You can't think of them as beings because it's a whole hyperdimensional thing that we can't even imagine. But for purposes of getting related, think of them as some kind of super beings. And their consciousness maintains the whole universe, which is the creation and the whole thing. And the letters I've been giving you for the people who sign these messages, all at the top and so on, are the actual letters by which those beings are known. And I happen to be, I think, blessed to have the three of them looking after this little mortal paddling over the earth and bumping in all sorts of sticks and stones and walls and so on. So that is who the Aleph and the Tav and the Tzadi are. So let me continue now. And then we'll take a break at 10 o'clock. I'll read this slowly so we can get the numbers. In the 2,368 days following September 9th, 1988, I already gave you the meaning of that particular date, the 135 will be increased in numbers. And then there's some Hebrew, which means following the prepared plan to double their number. That is, there will then be 270 as the first generation to be produced from these children, which will now be adults. Now, mind you, following the prepared plan to double their number, that is 2 times 135 to 270, and notice this, within the stronghold. Now, the word used for stronghold here is different than the one that came before, and again, I interpret this, and this is my doing, as the spacecraft, or New Jerusalem, or Holy of Holies, okay? Now, just to give you the numbers on that, the 2,368 days following September 9, 1988, is, again, by lunar reckoning, 6.48 years. You might be interested in a little gematria. Every once in a while I divert from the Hebrew to the Greek. But if you look up John Michel's book called The City of Revelation, which is available in paperback, on page 113, you'll see a reference to the number which I've just given you, 2,368. And in the Greek gematria, it comes from Plato, Michel says, quote, this number means the same, the other, and essence. And in the Greek letters, Tauton, Tauteru, Kai, Usia, adds up to 2,368. Now, what that really means is Plato's universal number. I don't know how many of you have ever gone deeply in Plato, but Plato's universal number is called the Plato's universal soul, is given this number, which is most revered by Christian mystics, and I gave that number to you yesterday. Yesterday I gave you 2,369, today I gave you 2,368, which is minus one instead of plus one, which means to Christians, not to Plato, Jesus Christ. Just so you know that these numbers are very complicated and intricate, and you have to decipher them. Now the last sentence, and then we'll take a break, is keep this secret from the adversary. Now I'm speaking publicly, right? The adversary is not in this room. The adversary is the balance of light and dark forces that operate extraterrestrially, higher realms, angels, devils, all those words that we use. And there is a battle of the sons of light and the sons of darkness continuously during these periods of transition which we're in. So that's what it means here as the adversary, not some sumptuous, flat-foot, extraterrestrial adversary. But these are the problems that those of you who are on the spiritual path are very much aware of. Namely, the higher you go in your spiritual development, the more your light shines and the more it attracts these moths of the negative forces and they do everything possible. These are the great struggles of the Christian mystics, and some of you here may know all about that, but that's what that means in essence. So we have time for some questions because this is very difficult material. I personally apologize for it being difficult, but that's the way it was given and that's the way you're getting it. All I can do is try to explain, clarify, somehow make it logical. Yes?
During your contact with these guys, have any of them made you know that they have heard anything about
their problems? The one that I mentioned?
Correct.
I have not had any direct contact on that question, no.
But their power seems as if they are, you know, way beyond power.
I know.
Your ability to concentrate.
I might add, I mentioned this, but some people didn't hear it, that when I called up Brian Toon at the Ames Research Center of NASA in California and talked to him about this sulfuric acid cloud, the big question that he has and that I have is, where did it come from? And he said they have no explanation, no satellite orbiting Earth picked up where that stuff came out of. Normally, sulfur dioxide would come out of a volcano. That's a normal source. But of all the volcanoes that have gone off since January of this year, there have been quite a few. None of them have produced this amount of gas. So it's a big question, and they refer to what you said. Who created all this stuff? I don't know. Guesswork. Yeah.
In this encounter in Quebec, they said they were from Venus. Does that mean that we live in the planet?
Yeah.
Venus
is 768 degrees Fahrenheit and all that stuff, and it's full of carbon dioxide. It's hostile to the kind of life that we represent, yes. I happen to have an interpretation, maybe at variance with that of modern science about Venus, but I have run into at least three credible sources, people in the last 30 years who have not only been to Venus in terms of simple astral projection, but who have had rides in ships. And I believe their testimony that life does exist in spite of what we consider to be hostile environment, and it's a small population, but it is there, and if we ever get a good landing of a Venus probe, we may find out whether that's true or false, but that hasn't been my belief, okay?
Is there a form analysis
of the Well, I think there's a problem there. Part of the problem is they don't get confused. I told you that Arthur Matthews saw beings that looked like us, right? The first thing you learn about beings in higher evolution, they have powers which makes them able to look like whatever you want them to look like. And I have personally been subjected to this where I see or have been shown things which I know are not real. My mind is not analytical enough to know, but still I cannot resist it. I see what I am programmed to see. So nobody, I think, really knows what they look like. In other words, if you come there as a terrestrial person to Venus and see them, they're going to look to you like they want you to see them. And this is something you just have to learn. And it all has to do with the simple powers of dematerialization, teleportation, and materialization, and so on. You can create any kind of sensory impression you want. So I don't think anybody really knows, and I know I don't know. And I told you about Uri Geller's getting aboard spacecraft and reporting to me what he saw, etc., and that they were robots. I don't really have proof that they are robots because they could make him think they were robots, etc. Although I believe they were robots because of the size of the craft, the so-called life support system, etc. But that is one of the big problems. Now let me just finish this whole idea. You can read 10,000 reports of people on Earth who had contacts with UFOs and extraterrestrial beings, right? And you can get 10,000 descriptions of what they look like. They don't all look alike. And you'll find out if you do a close psychological profile study between the person and the event, you'll see that whatever that person pretty much wanted to see, he saw. If he's in a terror mode, and most people are afraid of UFOs, why, I'll never know, because they're just other beings who, you know, as far as we're concerned, could be extraterrestrial insects and don't really bother us. But anyway, we have fear. That's one of the problems of being human. And whatever they expect to see, whatever they conjure, they're allowed to see. So they see all kind of bizarre, distorted creatures and shapes, and those who really are alike. And it's because that's what they get programmed to see in terms of their expectations, okay? Yes.
All right, about this acid rain. Now, I know there's been minute amounts that have gone on to Canada, which I had supposed that came from different factories and so on. And you mentioned the cloud of sulfuric acid. Would our ozone layer protect us, or would there be holes in that, or just
The cloud of sulfuric, really sulfur dioxide, has been measured by YouTube planes flying through them. They're about 13 miles high, so they're way below the ozone layer, and the ozone layer is 70, 80, 90, 100 miles up. So they're below that, and they're in the boundary layer of vapor mixture, that is super high clouds can reach that point. So this cloud, which is estimated to contain something like, will become 100 million tons of sulfuric acid, it'll make all acid rain that we've known look trivial.
All right, now where is this?
It's over about 19 degrees latitude, separate the Earth. This is the equator, 19, the delta is like this. It's in the northern latitude, it's not down here.
That one here over Mexico, just north Mexico City.
Yeah, it's right about that area. Now, we don't know where it's going to come down because the, you know, the jet streams, for example, could come from here, and we've seen that in the last few weeks right here in New York City. The jet stream can come way down.
When, where, and so on.
Well, you have to go back to the geological record for every year. There are about 15 to 20 volcanoes that go off every year, and some are little peanut affairs like Mount St. Helens, and others are gigantic things like El Chichon in Mexico. You just have to look at the gas analysis for each one. I can't give it to you off the top of my head.
I thought you had a particular one in mind.
No, no, just look up the records. It's a common gas that comes out of volcanoes. That is, I think the latest record I can think of is the Italian earthquake and volcanic eruption released a lot of cyanide gas. Cyanide is a very simple gas. There's a carbon and a nitrogen. Nothing to it. The easiest thing to synthesize in the world. Yes.
How do you consider, according to when you were talking about the ETs and their bases and so forth, how do you consider the work of Sandy Friedman when he was his investigations of them and cooling the fans of their ships, their structures, their physical structures?
Well, he describes it in great detail in the book, but Arthur Matthews saw them as looking very much like, he couldn't distinguish them from regular Earth people.
So he had indicated
that one of the uniforms comparable to us, the
second as...
The ones he saw up in the engine room looked the same to him. It doesn't mean that's what they looked like, but that's what he saw them as. Arthur is still alive, not very far. He's very interesting. He's about, I guess 87 or 88 now.
You know what
the contact? Oh, yeah. Call him up, and maybe I have his telephone number in my book. I'll look it up. He's around. Okay, let's take a break and bye. The clock data text, and then there's a natural ending here because it then gets in a lot of nitty gritty about fine detail of what happens in the first 90-month period and the 80-month period and so on. We'll do that tomorrow. So I'll finish this section, and then we'll go into a discussion to make sure that we're all in sync and everything's cleaned up and there's no gaps or nobody's unhappy with what has been said so far, and we'll try to clarify best we can. I'll start now quoting from the text. The time of the 24 days at the end of the 80-month period will be one of testing, yes, and of anguish. If you remember, there's a gap between the end of the 80-month period in, I forget what it was now, August 17th, 1989, I have to go back, and September 9th, which is the beginning of the New Age period. So there's that 24 days, and this will be the most crucial period. And it repeats now, it says, I'll run through that quickly. The time of the 24 days at the end of the 80-month period will be one of testing, yes, and of anguish, and that's signed by Todd. And then it says, to re-emphasize, the anguish will be powerful. And then it goes again to re-emphasize, it says, the 24 civilizations, the 9, and the 135 representatives will all be under great pressure. And then there's a stop. And then it continues to the 9 and to the 900 Sadim. Sadim means wise people. This is a totally different group that I haven't defined before, but they are part of the 24 civilizations. You might think of it as a council. Send your prayers during the coming 90 months, which we just ended. Remember, this was all written back in 75, and the 80-month periods. I will end there because the rest of the stuff gets in a lot of fine detail, which takes an awful lot of explanation. So let's try to clean up what has been said. Maybe I can clarify one part, which is the dating of all this business, just so we have that. Let me draw a little sketch here on the board. All right, let's start here. In terms of our sidereal time, I'll step aside so you can read it. From the period of December 1, 75, to July 1, I haven't given you the reason for this, this will come up tomorrow, July 1st, 1978. This is a 34-month period. We have the following forecasts, all of which are behind us now. I'll just call them predictions. We have one. The seventh seal has been opened. That idea, as you know, comes largely from the Book of Revelations, which is probably one of the most complex pieces of writing ever produced by either human or superhuman agency. The true meaning of that you can read in the Book of Revelations, it's quite accurate. But it does mean the opening of the end of time, at least a time cycle. So, if you need super hearing, let's say, as an example, you're going to be a super musician or hear things that people don't normally hear, you have a little implant put in the ear. It looks like a little, looks like an old-fashioned phonograph needle. I'll explain to you how I know this for sure. I was walking on the beach in the southern end of Israel, a place called Ashdod, and I was just looking for artifacts, just taking a break. And I found a small jar that looked like a little vial with a neck on it, and it had on it a whole series of Egyptian characters, four rows of them. I recognized immediately from my Egyptian studies that these were the most archaic forms of the Egyptian language. No, going back somewhere around 10,000 B.C. They've only been found in pottery shards. So I went back to Tel Aviv and I showed this to Uri. And I said, what do you think this is? And he said, I don't know. I said, any psychic guess? No, I don't know. So I went over to the Rockefeller Museum in Jerusalem and I said, what is this? He said, oh, some Arab probably sold that to you. It's a fake. First off, and I found it myself. The guy told me in Arabic. Anyway, nobody really knew what it is. So I had to communicate with the extraterrestrial through the tape recorder. And I said, what is this thing that I found? He said, well, we materialized that for you. You've been asking about implants. We want to show you what an implant is. I said, well, what do you mean this thing's an implant? It looks too big. No, there's something inside. You have to hit it with a hammer and break it. I said, break it? My God, a priceless record, a relic I can't trip on. He said, well, no, you've got to break it. Now, I took a hammer and I hit it, but before I did that, I took all the photographs. I had a complete record of what this thing looks like. And when I broke it open, there was a compact crystalline incense, obviously thousands of years old, which had just crystallized. And in the middle of this crystal, which had broke up, was a shiny, I can only say it looked like a stainless steel needle. The old phonograph needle, you know, kind of screwed in and you crank the thing. That's what it looked like. So I went back and said, okay, I see it. What is this? I said, well, we used to implant these things. They're what you would call solid-state devices. They're complete receivers, transducers, and transmitters. And we used to implant them by materialization, not by surgery, in the auditory nerve between, as it passes from the mechanical portion of the ear into the brain, and between the wall, the bony wall, and the auditory nerve. And that is an implant. And when a person has that in, we can communicate with him from any point in space. He hears our voice. They said, what other kind of implants do you do? Well, there's implants for the heart and for the brain and for the muscles. And I mean, it's just like a whole factory, wholesale factory of devices that were implanted in people. They said, well, I'd like to watch the process of being of implants being put in. And well, I said, here's Uri. We've implanted him here, here, here so that he can send his energy through your electronic media, through telephones, through television, through radio. And he has a thing here, and a thing here, and a thing here, and a thing here. And if you took an x-ray, you could see this thing. But I talked to Uri, I said, look, if I take an x-ray, he said, you're not going to take an x-ray on me. Anyway, he helped me take the x-ray. Sure enough, there are things there. But you try to get Uri to take an x-ray. Even when he was in the army, he refused to have an x-ray taken. That's pretty good. And he got through the Israeli army for 3 years without ever having an x-ray taken. So anyway, there are things called implants, which we're just beginning to hear about because we know about cardiac pacemaker implants and we know about pain implants, but these are big, clunky, Victorian gadgets compared to what I'm talking about. Most implants are organic. They look like seeds. If you stop to think about it, a seed is a total computer. In one little seed, you have a whole program to build a huge, big lump of flesh like I or anybody else is here. So that's what implants are, okay? And a lot of these people that we're talking now about the 135, come for very specialized missions and they have these implants. and some of them are aware of them, and some are not. I myself, I just have to be very honest with you, said, look, I was brought up in a certain school of medicine where you never gave a patient any medicine unless you tried it yourself and knew what the effects were. That's because I went to a school called Northwestern. We had a fellow called A.C. Ivey in the physiology department who insisted that we all go through this. So I was disciplined. I said, look, I'm not going to be involved in anybody getting implants unless I have one myself. They'll say, what kind of implant do you want? I said, okay, I want to be able to heal. Okay, we'll implant you. So in the sleep, I got implanted in the various parts of my body, and I could heal very effectively and do all sorts of things that I never was able to do before. But what happened was I had a rash that was traveling all over my body for 1 year. This was from 1974, 1975, and I did not sleep for that 1 year. I couldn't sleep because of this rash. And there was nothing I could do to get rid of it. So I went back to the bionics department and I said, what are you doing here? I mean, this is killing me. They said, well, you would just simply ask for this kind of out of phase, out of time, as a demonstration to show you how it works. And we are showing you how it works. You're older than most people who get implants, and you're using it prematurely because I was already testing its power. And you're just going to have to live with it until you get adjusted to all these foreign things we put in there. It took a year, it all settled down, and so I learned personally the whole cycle of implants, all the way from finding the physical implant to seeing it done on others, seeing it done on myself. So many of these 135 who come for specialized reasons are loaded with this kind of thing in order to give them powers that are really quite extraordinary. It's something totally beyond our human knowledge, except that we know that the medical electronics is kind of bringing its first step into this area in a very clumsy, crude, inefficient way. But anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Would certain
mediums
who are in touch with these would they also have implants?
A lot of mediums have implants, they don't even know about it.
Okay, and then the fringe mediums would fall, not mediums, they do not have.
If you find somebody who's like a super clairvoyant or a super contactor of other souls, a lot of things are done to us, again, it's a free will question that we don't know about. And you usually, if you follow the evolution of a medium from the first time they had something psychic happen to them, through the years, you can pretty well pinpoint, or you can under hypnosis recover information about it. This is much more widespread than just the 135, the children, and all this other stuff. It is also done therapeutically for these 99 out of 100 who don't make it. They get extra splints, so to speak, to get them through their difficulties. But that's a whole complicated subject, when they are healthy and when they're not healthy.
About the incoming of the higher evolved souls for service on Earth, they get embroiled in the materiality of Earth. What effect does this have on the different studies that is channeling on their own soul evolution from that point forward?
That's a very complicated question. I think Madame Blavatsky really kind of took that question up in her secret doctrine when she speaks about the first root race and the second root race and the third root race. In other words, the mixing of the new with the old. And we have, as you probably know, on Earth, representatives of, there is indeed a first root race and a second root race and a third root race. And there are relations between them. And it's a whole complicated area, but I would refer you to somebody like Blavatsky to really get the full answer to your question.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. I was interested in your own.
It's not too different. They coexist and they help each other, just like we live with plants and bacteria and all kind of other forms of life. I was just going to say, maybe it's a good time to cut this thing because we've been at it pretty long and sure you want to bring the... Feel free to just ask any questions to fill in the hole. Now I will continue because this is going to be a little slow. And today I'm going to be decent to you and give you a break at 10 o'clock and not change those chairs. It's going to be very difficult, and I'll do the best that I can to explain this. So this is the ultimate in cryptic messages. Quote, the bait. Bait is the Hebrew, which we call Beth, like Bethlehem, second letter in Hebrew alphabet. The bait, life-containing archetypes. And I'm just going to put that on the board to keep all the record. Maybe it's straight. Here's the bait. It's like this. And the B sound. The archetypal meaning of this was a house, an enclosure. To make it very clear what we're talking about here, I'll read the next sentence. The Gimel, the Aleph animated movement of such bait life, really emerged from 1990 to 1999. The letter, next letter is Gimel, like this. And what is being said here is the following. Aleph, which we'll put up here, is a, I have to address myself to the physicists here, a hyperdimensional being, and the simplest way that you can think of it is the energy, which is multidimensional, that we would use to do healing, or to bend metal, or to teleport something, or to dematerialize something. It's that order of intelligent energy. And it enters the house, which is the house of matter. That's what the true meaning of the bait symbol is in the Hebrew alphabet. And when you have the animation, think of it in among the lines of the virgin implantation of the forms of life as I have already described for human beings, women on earth who are bearing these children. So you have the start of life here, but initiated again, not by a pair of male-female genes as we normally reproduce both in the human and the animal kingdom. And when this develops, you have the appearance of the fully developed organism, the embryo, the fetus, the living, walking, talking person. So that's what those two sentences mean. I will continue. I've already indicated, it says here they will emerge from 1980 to 1989. I've already indicated to you the two types of beings which are being born by this process, the Aleph, Beit, and animation. And so I need not go into that many since I've covered that in detail. Now, the next sentence says, this new life needs special nurture from the 12, the 3 times 4. That is from Gimel here. The 12, unfortunately, is very arcane, but I'll do the best I can. I've indicated all along that there are 9 fundamental laws that kind of hold the universe together, right? Which we call the 9. Actually, there are 12, but 3 are not in operation. They're not in operation because they're somewhere in the universe, in some body form, moving amongst various peoples in the universe and doing their thing. So if you want to imagine how this works, you all know what a dodecahedron looks like, a 12-sided figure, geometrical figure, each surface of which has 5 sides, okay? But it so happens that if you take 12 dodecahedrons, they will enclose a space of which the inside space is the outline of a dodecahedron. So 12 dodecahedrons will form a total enclosure, and you have a 13th enclosure inside, which is the exact form of the dodecahedrons and enclosure. This is standard geometry. Which is where we come, so you have, of those 12 enclosures, 9 are the 9 that we're speaking about, the operating laws that govern the universe. The 3 are not part of the operation of the governance of the universe. They're like the roving quarterback in football or other sports. They're at liberty to move around the universe and do things. But the mystery comes in with the 13th empty space. And it's a pure void as far as we can define it. And this is a minor metaphor. I'm not saying this is the way the universe is constructed. And the 13th is the true being that we call God. And 13 has always been considered an unlucky number in every culture because they knew that this was the most sacred number you could think of. And therefore you should never utter it. And therefore mamas told their little children this is a bad luck day, a bad luck number, everything else, so that you never used it. And that's the real meaning of 13. And one could go on at great length defining that, but I have to tell you that in order to clarify what this talk message is saying. Let me repeat again. This new life needs special nurture from the 12. That's the 12. 12 dodecahedra that encircle the 13. But the creation starts from the 13 and works outward. So it's really, in a reverse way, the Aleph. Okay? I don't want to get too puzzled and worried here, otherwise we'll lose the thread of things. In special nurture from the 12, non-physical organic movement, telekinetic, of Beit, of being there, animated by Aleph, to Dalet. It's already gone through Gimel, now it's a form that exists on Earth. This proceeds, I better put the dollar down so we keep all of our references straight. These are the terms in which life evolves when it is created from scratch.
Could you read that again?
Yeah, I will. Because it's the most confusing part of the whole thing, because what I'm telling you can be translated into chemical terms very easily. It's the formula for the origin of life. That life that is created anew, that's not just reproductive, okay? I will read the whole thing again, this last difficult passage. This new life needs special nurture from the 12. In other words, it couldn't survive on terrestrial food and air alone. The 3 times 4, that is the 12. Non-physical organic movement, telekinetic, of fate animated by Aleph, to Dalet. These are the 4 stages now. The physical forms emerging from Gimel. That is, you have the creation, you have the birth, and then this is the part that begins evolution. The different forms emerge from there. If you want to think of that in a very simple way, the most primitive form of life are like the blue-green algae in the sea, which have no function other than capture photons from the sun and produce carbohydrates and oxygen. But from that primitive form of life, all the other millions of species evolve, okay? That's what we're talking about. This proceeds through the hay, which is another step, I just will put it down in a minute, which are life archetypes for individual species to evolve, which is further fertilization of hay on Dalet. I know this is totally confusing, but I've got to give it as it is. Until Yod, the completed physical existence originates from Aleph. So, Aleph's faith, a form emerges here, and this is not accurate, but it will help you think. You think of this part here as an algae. We're talking about the entire life process, not just the kid being created. Goes through a space called Dalet, which you can think of as some cellular organism, just to make it easy. And then you have hay, and this is a hay. Then you have bark here, like this. And then you have cornyard. So we have stages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Somebody asked me the other day about the meaning of the numbers 5, 6, somebody, I think it was 10, asked about 7. Well, this is where you get into the meaning of numbers to understand the evolutionary process of creation. It's not just manipulation of numbers. But I think we could spend forever on this and not really understand it, so I'm going to try to compress it and tell you. Creative impulse comes here from a higher source, that means higher dimensions, more than four dimensional source, enters the domain of matter, which you can think of as atoms at this stage, and goes through these primitive forms like algae and cell, get organized in something that's larger, and then we have a form here that could be humans like us, and then we have it here, the next stage of evolution. And this also, a little digression, but it may clarify the whole business. Some of you may have read the Mayan writings that have been translated. The Mayans are the only people on earth that we have a clear text record where they seem to have knowledge of the prior 6,000 year cycles of human evolution. And they call them the suns, sun one, sun two. About every 6,000 years, the earth is cleaned up and new life starts. And we are ending according to the Mayan chronology, which is astronomical, precise. We are ending the fifth cycle here. And we're going into the sixth phase of consciousness. Because every time there's a destruction, cleanup, there's an upstep in evolution. So according to the Mayan texts, which were last written perhaps 1,500 to 2,000 years ago, and then have lain around in stone text, have been deciphered in the last 10 years, and we have the same sixth civilization or sixth evolutionary stage of mankind coming up, which is what is being talked about here. So you have a historical track for this kind of arcane Hebrew symbolism, and in this case, extraterrestrial instruction. I will continue because I don't think we're going to clarify this much farther than I have. The only other clarification I could give you is to start with the whole biochemistry and physics of this and spell out how life evolves molecule by molecule and so on. Yes, Ted?
The last couple of lines of the text that we've been reading, which is repeated last section.
Okay, I'll start with the line that says, this proceeds through hay, this letter here, which is a life archetype, to vav, here, which is further fertilization of hay on dalet, that's going backwards. You got that up to now? Until yod, over here. I skip something in here, but I don't want to go into it. The complete of physical existence originating from Allah. Got that? Okay. Now I continue. I know. Yeah, I didn't want to go into it. There's a gap in here. It'll get us into a morass. I mean, I don't mind going into it, but I want to have clear impressions left in your mind and not a bunch of mush. New life will burst out of the hostile conditions starting in the third to fourth year and fully by the ninth year, which is 1998. Period. As the earth warms up after the devastation by the mid-1990s, This period will be the most difficult for living things. In 1999, there will appear the Holy of Holies, the New Jerusalem, the tree of the Garden of Eden, the 5 + 7 = 12, as a shelter and refuge for the 10 years. I saw that you didn't put in on all these sequential buildups. Okay. Now, where do we leave off? Oh. The reason this period is going to be most difficult, well, I'll tell you, it'll come out later. I won't go into it now, but you'll see why it's going to be difficult because of the conditions on Earth. I'm not telling you this is all going to happen, mind you. I'm just telling you what the text says. I want to clearly distinguish between them. While I have faith in the text, I don't know necessarily where this is going to happen. I don't know of any prophecy that's absolutely 100% correct, as long as we have free will in the universe, and particularly on Earth. Because I know that if everybody on Earth, all 4 billion people, overnight had a transformation and cleaned up their acts and became pure and jealous, loving beings, none of this would ever have to happen.
No way.
So if you all want to bootstrap yourself, it can be done. But I know, too, as a realist, that that is impossible. Because some people don't want to do the right thing. They want to do the bad thing. That's a lot of fun for them. All right, we'll go on. Now, here's, again, more esoteric, huh? And I'll do the best I can to explain it. And some of it I don't really understand because, again, it does not come from a human background of associations and belief structures and so on. So therefore, this is very difficult material to understand and even to accept. I think all of us will have the same problem with this material I'm about to read that this nice lady here is going to have. Okay, well, listen to this now. In 1989, there will appear the Holy of Holies, the tree of the Garden of Eden, the 5 + 7 = 12, as a shelter and refuge for 10 years, as from 1989 to 1999. And then there's a bunch of stops to emphasize and isolate this sentence. And I will just stop right there and try to explain what this means. To me, the only thing that sentence can mean is that life will be so difficult for these young children who will, of course, be getting up into 8, 9, 10, 11 years old at that point, depending on when they were born, will be so difficult that even with caves and water as power source and the ability to synthesize food, which I haven't gone into, but I've had some side discussions with some of my colleagues about the origin of life chemical process, which I've uncovered. You can produce food without going through the whole plant cycle. But even then, you have, and it will come up later, the element of noxious gases. And sulfur dioxide and sulfuric acid is only one example. It's perfectly possible to have a volcano erupt, and this has happened in history, and produce pure cyanide gas, and nothing could survive that. And also, I don't know if technology that could really isolate a large group, a large population, when we talk about several hundred people, from that kind of influence. So the only way I can interpret this incredibly bizarre sentence is that some big spaceship is going to come down and pick them up and keep them up out of this thing until the Earth settles down, cools off, and all the gases that have been released have been diluted and incorporated into plant life and so on. And the reason I believe that is the phrase that is used in Hebrew, the Holy of Holies, is what I believe to be the phrase in the Greek New Testament that describes the New Jerusalem, the Holy City, if you remember, in the Book of Revelation. It comes down from the sky, and it's a big, big city that's coming down, if you remember the measurements of that city, and that city to me is a crest. And if you've ever seen a giant spaceship as I have, 600-700 feet long, it does look like an incredibly large city. And if you've seen movies like Star Wars and so on, you know how big they look in the movies. They look like cities. So that's the sort of thing. And the truth of that is using the word the tree of the Garden of Eden, which is the tree of knowledge. That's necessarily one.